weighed bids as per the request of other members. They were still finding their way here to the venue. I hope we all have the program in front of us. Honorable members, do we all have? Okay. The apologies that we have received is only one from Mr. Didoit. And Mr. Karim is on his way. And according to the calculations, we can start our meeting. We do form a quorum. And I'll move quickly to the next item, which is the consideration of Appropriation Bill B6B 2019. Honorable members, this will seem like a repetition, but I found it necessary to follow the procedure and not leave out anything else. And I know that we are all aware that the Treasury has made a presentation in our previous joint meeting with the Appropriation Bill Committee from NA. So today they are just going to summarize, formalize the same presentation that they have done. And I don't expect new debates on the same presentation. That's my expectation. Just to highlight it, I feel it's important that I highlight it. I'm going to allow the DG, Shem, he's alone today, and we appreciate your availability, DG, that you have taken this meeting serious. You have not taken it for granted that I have presented. Why do I have to go back again and present? That kind of commitment is really appreciated, and we're looking forward to working together and all the time cooperate. Over to you, DG.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. We appreciate the opportunity again once more to explain and to present the appropriate 2019 appropriation bill to you. So I'll immediately just go into the presentation. If you look at section from slide number 2, this bill is presented in terms of the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Amendment Act of 2018, and it's a requirement that we present this bill and the Division of Revenue to be passed by at least the 31st July, because if it's not passed by the 31st July, the authority of government to spend becomes quite a crisis, because we may not then, after that period, spend. So it is therefore important and critical that we present to you and go through the motions in making sure that the bill is passed by the 31st of July. Now, in terms of the 2019 Appropriation Bill, we tabled this bill, as indicated previously, in Parliament at the time of the 2019 budget. And at the time of the budget, we also presented to Parliament at the time both the Appropriation Bill and the Division of Revenue Bill, where some provisions are contained with specific funding and spending that must take place in provinces and in municipalities. Slide number 4. It is anticipated, as I said, that if we don't spend by the end of July, we may not expend 45%, so we may just have a crisis. So just to emphasize that point in slide number 4 that I've mentioned before. So the report in front of you basically touches on a number of items, and in respect of each amendment indicate the reasons for such proposed amendment. That's what we're going to detail. Demonstrate, secondly, how the amendment must take place into account the broad strategic priorities and allocations relevant to each and every budget. Also demonstrate the implication of each proposed amendment for an affected vote and the main divisions within that vote. Also demonstrate the impact of any proposed amendment on the balance between transfer payments and capital and recurrent spending. Set out the impact the proposed amendment on service delivery in quite a detail, and all of those details as part of the bill or as part of the documentation presented at the budget. There's something called E&E, Estimates of National Expenditure, which is also what's presented. It's a thick document outlining activities and for each and every vote. So again, and it's where impact on service delivery will be seen and what each department anticipate doing in the year ahead. We'll set out the manner in which the amendment relates to the prevailing department strategic plans, reports of the Auditor General Committee reports that are adopted in the House, and also look at Section 32 of the PFMA and annual reports presented and submitted to the House. Now, in terms of how the bill is structured, it's divided by vote and by main division within a vote, that is in terms of its program and or transfer and subsidies to a national department within a vote. There are transfers, and all of those are listed in within the vote. A purpose is set for each vote, program, and transfer and subsidy to a national department within a vote, and all the allocations are characterized in terms of the international financial reporting system, where we clearly have to separate and indicate current payments, transfer subsidies, payments for capital assets, and payment for financial assets. And allocations marked within a single asterisk refer to specifically and exclusively appropriate allocations, including but not limited to all vote and national departments of compensation of employees. We introduced this, honourable members, a few years ago because the authority to change compensation budgets was with the department and the treasury, but we thought, especially as we became too cumbersome to do that, and also departments willy-nilly moving money across from goods and services to compensation budgets, we wanted to ensure that we specifically and exclusively appropriate allocations for compensation budgets, and that has been the hallmark of budget documentation in the last two financial years. And also, as per the Division of Revenue Bill, the grants are listed and the conditions thereof for each grant. As I said, the E&E outlines information, detailed information on all of those issues that are listed in slide number 7, and exactly how the departments will spend monies appropriated, including details of plans, including funding, both whether you look at funding from the fiscals or donor funding, etc. So it becomes then easy for Parliament, as they engage with different votes or different departments, to look at the E&E and say to Department X, as per your E&E or your plans, estimates of national expenditure, where are you at any given point in time in you as a committee playing your oversight role? So all those details is actually in the E&E per department and very detailed. So, Honourable Chair, that for me, I think, is key for the departments in Parliament, both in committees and select committees, to ensure that they actually look at the estimates of national expenditure in detail. And what we've made it easy in our website, over and above just the consolidated thick document, we also listed per department, the E&E per department, which then becomes easy that it's manageable in that it's a few pages that you can engage with per department. That's very key from what we would recommend as an oversight tool that the committees can use. Now, in terms of background of what the budget 2019 or this appropriation bill outlined, series of economic and fiscal measures intended to move the economy to a new trajectory will keep on focusing and emphasizing that it's important that we actually come up with measures that will support growth in the economy. And as the central policy goal is to ensure that we accelerate inclusive growth and the creation of jobs, and that's what the government or the ruling party has directed the administration into. The main objective of the fiscal objective is to ensure sustainable finances by containing the budget deficit and stabilizing public debt. Now, if we can't lose on these two aspects, then we would have lost it with trying to contain budget deficit. But you will notice, and I will come back to that when I again separately talk to the committee about Section 16, that in stabilizing public debt and the deficit, there are other factors that are beyond the current, and I'll talk about that in terms of the position and the deteriorating financial position of state-owned companies that are putting a huge pressure on the fiscals. So that's something that we will I will talk to you later on in the presentation. So this budget, as you present, confronts a very difficult environment where growth remains weak, public debt is increasing, debt service costs are accelerating, and there are governance and operational concerns, and they manifest themselves across the public sector. We are saying this not to suggest that we have lost the plot, no, and or not even to suggest that South Africa is beginning to become a failing or safe state. No, we are not saying that. But we are constantly reminding ourselves that we have got challenges and we have to confront them. Weak economic performance, tax administration problems that we have indicated before openly, and the minister was very detailed in terms of issues that has got to do with SARS and its ability to collect, and also the shortfalls that come as a result of problems in tax administration. And I did mention deterioration of state-owned companies. In light of the consideration, the budget priorities are to narrow the deficit and stabilize national debt-to-GDP ratio, support restructuring of the electricity sector, meaning the allocations that we make to ESCOM in particular, renew economic growth, strengthening private sector investment, improving planning, and implementation of infrastructure projects and rebuilding institutions. So that basically is the background of what this, some of the aspects that are important. We're also doing some reprioritization where there are baseline reductions over the next 3 years of about 50.3 billion, with half about of this amount leading to compensation. These reductions are offset by provincial allocation of 75 billion over the next 3 years, and in particular, there are three areas where focused funding is then recommended. One is ESCOM reconfiguration of 23 billion per year for 3 years. Infrastructure fund, in terms of money that we set aside over the next 3 years as a start, because as the president indicated in the State of the Nation address, we want to target 100 billion rand in this fund actually to boost productive sectors of the economy, and we think by creating a focused infrastructure fund we'll be able to do that. And then obviously there's 2021 census data that we must make sure that we have, and so allocations of 1.3 billion to South Africa. Contingency reserve is increased by almost 6 billion in 1920 to respond to possible requests by state-owned companies, in particular ESCOM, DENEL. Minister of Finance mentioned that, ESCOM, DENEL, and SAA. And we said, and I think we've got a year to do that, whereby we have to ensure that we said it before, but we actually never may come around it in a way that we want, because we don't want to erode the value of the moment you talk about which state-owned companies before you strike the deal and confirm it, then obviously because of market forces, you tend to lose the value of what we're trying to do. So we will continue ensuring that we support these financial, I mean, these state-owned companies by raising money from the sale of non-core assets that obviously have been identified, and you know, we are working through them in terms of disposing some of them. The above spending adjustments increase main budget non-interest by almost 25 billion over the medium term compared to the 28 budget estimate. Slide number 10. We basically identify, based on the economic classification, the spending items and the division thereof, where you can see current payments of almost 245 billion, transfer and subsidies, and obviously, Parliament budget of almost 2 billion rand. Slide number 11. Appropriation bill insofar as compensation of employees' budgets are concerned. Police, defense, correctional services, higher education and training, justice and constitutional development, and those are the allocations. Prison security departments, as we all know, tend to be labor intensive, and hence the budget are the largest spending items in personnel. And in higher education, we've got TVET college and CET colleges, and the numbers as indicated there. Slide number 12. The list carries on. Defense, police, as I said, the security related departments, including basic education. So a share of total of these budgets, it's also indicated, which gives honourable members an opportunity to see what's the share of total budget as we get deeper into the compensation budget. Slide number 13, appropriation bill budget allocated for goods and services. In education, basic education mainly is for printing and distribution of books from grade R to 9 learners, 23,000 schools, and the amount is almost at 1.2 billion. All of the details, as I said, are indicated. If you go to basic education E&E, you will see these numbers and the details thereof. For security departments, goods and service budgets are in line with their size, with the main categories being computer services, contractors for the maintenance of weapon systems and property payments for defense, nutrition services for correctional services, computer services for justice. When one looks at the large DCOP goods and service budgets, mainly related to the transfer to the funding of the community works program, they've got a huge component of that program. Rural development and land reform goods and services, its operational budget for administrative support, corporate services, and the entire function of the department. Slide number 14. In environmental affairs, provides for expanded public works program also. So there's a huge component of expanded public works program, community works program, and we continue to ramp that program up because of the job opportunities and the jobs that are, you know, short-term job opportunities that are created, which have got a huge impact in any poverty alleviation program that government has embarked on in the last few years. So there's a dent that these public works programs is making on poverty, and I think moving forward it's something that we support. Funding was reclassified from transfers and subsidies during the production of the 2020 estimates of the E&E to align with the standard chart of accounts and guidelines for implementing on the economic reporting format. This is mainly, honourable members, just a technical point, because for us to understand, to know what we're spending on, we have to standardize our chart of accounts. You may be aware that as we inherited, the legacy of pre-94, we had 14 education departments, 14 health departments, self-governing states, homeland, all of those. House of Assembly would have its own, House of Delegates, etc. Now, when we mesh all of these things, at some point we had almost in excess of 2 million charts in our chart of accounts. Meaning, in simple language, meaning the definition of capital was not the same. So we had to, as a very focused, elaborate effort, focus a program in the early days of our democracy, standardizing the chart of accounts, which made it easy for provinces and national departments, provincial departments, to make the same definition so that our totals talks to the same thing. We have started doing that in the last few years in the municipal space. There's something called MSCOA you may be aware of. Municipal standards of a chart of accounts, so that we standardize the definition of the categories of expenditure for the whole of the state, especially at local government. So these are things that so that our economic reporting formats are in line, as I said, with the IFRS systems, the globally accepted systems of financial reporting. So we've perfected that in the last few years, and we'll continue to ensure that the reporting is something that can make it easy for you to play your oversight role. Home Affairs main spending items include computer services, operating leases and property payments, operational leases, travel subsistence and operating system, making the most of DECO's budget on goods and services. As you know, I mean, leases everywhere in the world, making a travel and subsistence, etc., trying to ensure that DECO fulfills its mandate. Slide number 15 talks to allocations in terms of transfers, as one can expect. Social development, that's where your transfers, your SASA transfers are at. same as you know, transfers insofar as you know, COCTA, higher education, you know, the subsidies to in different education, I mean universities, etc., transport, health, national treasury. We make lots of transfers, and I'll give you the details as this presentation goes. If you look at the next slide, basically those are some of what transfers I was talking about. IEC, Independent Communications Authority, Public Protector, NSFAS, Higher Education, SANRAL, we make almost 21 billion. SARS, that's from National Treasury, and all of those listed there. There's a lot of transfers. So what then the issue is, and which hasn't been the hallmark of accountability arrangements that are built into what I think or what I propose the committee should want to focus on. Nothing stops the committees from asking or engaging directly with all of these entities, including many others. There's almost 1,000-plus entities now across the whole of national government, whereby Parliament should actually even hold the ARC accountable for 1 billion that we spend, that we transfer into them, including NSFAS or SARS or PLASA, any of these agencies listed here, so that our task as Treasury is made easier, because we've got a double task, to engage with the department and also to engage directly with the entities in terms of their transfers. So all I was saying is simply that Parliament can also focus on entities. I did explain that higher education transfers to universities, basic education grants, and nutrition program remains an area where we continue to feed young learners and in your poor schools. NSFAS transfers, Funza Lushaka, bursaries for prospective teachers, all that is increasing. And slide 18, and we list some of the transfers, including some of the transfers, National Treasury transfers, in slide number 19, and mainly that talks to the operations. Secret Service, I'm lifting that one up. The Secret Service budget is a line in the Treasury budget. It's just the transfer line item, and so it's something that, including SARS and others. Slide number 20. Assets, repayment for capital assets, water and sanitation, police. These are some of the, appropriation bill allocates for the payments of those assets. Slide 21 continues that in education, school infrastructure backlog grant focus on improving sanitation and eradicating pit latrines. This is something that we've identified. So this budget aims at ensuring that we don't have such challenges that we had, where children fall into these pit latrines, especially in your rural areas. So there's a focused effort to eradicate this, and this is a very detailed program where even the private sector is partnering with government to ensure that we do this. Security departments, infrastructure buildings in police stations, the courts, army base, and military hospitals. Water and sanitation budget, regional bulk infrastructure budget, RBIC, 3.1 billion. Water service infrastructure grant, almost 560 million. Now, this area is also important because for us to ensure our water security, we really need to, this budget also focus that in terms of how water security is going to be an issue moving forward. ARC remains an area of interest. Parliamentary grant transfers, allocation of operations, including some of the activities in ensuring that foot and mouth disease is actually controlled and the outbreaks are controlled. Rural and development and land reform program. Now, in terms of this program, we all know that in terms of the new budget structure, agriculture and rural development is matched. So there will obviously, as we go towards as the NMOC, the National Macro Organization of the State of Government, is continuing. That NMOC process will, as the year goes by, help us clarify how the spending is going to happen in some of those departments where there's measures. I'm already dealing with this because clearly it was a question the last time. So the NMOC process is we're contemplating that it will end around November or so, and some details in terms of the changes and the impact will obviously bring it through at the medium-term budget policy so that we realign properly spending items moving forward and ensure that there's benefit in merging some of the departments. So the details will obviously come later. Payments for financial assets, public enterprises, human settlements, treasury. Now, again, what those entail is listed in slide 23. As I said, 17.5 billion is for ESCOM, debt obligation and recapitalization, as we said, and this was as part of Section 16. So Section 16 allocation is not new, it's not addition to the 23 that already we are putting on to you as part of the recommendation for you to approve the appropriation bill. We just use the provision of Section 16 to bring forward the 23 billion, and that's when we actually allocated ESCOM. So once this bill is approved by the 31st of July and your process in thereof and you agree, we will then pass the balance of the 23 minus 17 to ESCOM. But and all our members should not confuse this process with the special appropriation bill, as I can imagine you know that. The special appropriation bill tabled in the National Assembly yesterday is also different, and that's why it's additional to this 23 billion per year. It is additional by 59 billion, as we explained, the minister explained yesterday in the National Assembly. But for now, we're only dealing with the appropriation bill, and I will also explain parts of Section 16 in my later presentation, going back to this bullet number one in slide 23. Human settlements provide 50 million towards recapitalization of the National Housing Finance Corporation. Again, it will be in Parliament's interest to actually call the NHFC and say, come, tell us what you do, how you want to do it, what's your target, where have been your challenges, how are you going to improve the area. And in that way, you're strengthening our hand as the National Treasury in fulfilling the mandate to oversee the management of public finances. National Treasury, we allocated ourselves 4.7 billion, okay, again, but again, it's not for ourselves, but it's mainly to meet the international obligations, in particular the New Development Bank, and acquiring shares in the South African, in the African Development Bank, and to acquire shares, more shares in the World Bank, as indicated. Now, let me pause on this slide 23 and say, we immediately one can see that 4.7 billion is transferred to these international institutions. What do we get in return? I should be honest with all our members in saying, we have to rethink how we engage these international bodies and how we don't just have to boast as a country and say we own the World Bank or we own the African Development Bank or we own the NDB. But the question is, what value can we derive? We invest so much, but I can tell you now, and we know this and we are doing something about it, and I'll give details. We put 4.7 billion, but when you look in NDB or the BRICS Bank, when you look at the benefit that we're getting, it's little, it's small. But when you compare that with China, Brazil, and India, that even China themselves, they may not need the money, but they're taking advantage of the benefit of getting these loans from them, cheap loans for that matter, both in the World Bank or AFDB or New Development Bank. But in our case, our approach is that we've been too unnecessarily cautious in engaging. We still think we still think the World Bank and the African Development Bank is the World Bank of the olden days in terms of its structural adjustment programs. That's totally different. It's changed in the last 15 years, 20 years. It has changed, and I think the challenge is, how do we diversify our borrowing? We go every year, as you know, this appropriation bill says we're going to go and raise money in the market. We go and just raise bonds every week. The plan is, instead of going out into the market and raising money through the normal way, instead of 100% of that traditional way that we raise money, we should think aloud and say, instead, 20% or 30% of our loan portfolio in this financial year or the next three financial years will be focally, focused on these MDBs, because the value of this is that it's cheap money, yes. And second, and we shouldn't politicize the process like we used to, which was a good thing then, because these institutions were anyway seen by many as extensions of the imperialist systems and colonization, whatever we used to say in the early days. But the reality is that we own the BRICS Bank today. We shouldn't feel ashamed to go to the BRICS Bank or NDP and say, we are putting in 4 billion per year. We want 30 billion to do roads, municipal roads, to do school infrastructure, to do that and that and that. We mustn't feel ashamed. So what we are thinking out loud is to ensure that my team is putting proposals together for cabinet to consider, and we have been encouraged by cabinet to ensure that we ensure maximum value for owning these institutions and for being partnering with these institutions. So I thought, Chair, I'll pause there and just talk about those bullets under the 4.7 billion that we use to as payment for financial assets from National Treasury. Slide 24. Exclusively and specifically appropriated amounts, talks to, as I said earlier, conditional grants, compensation budget, compensation linked to capital projects, and all of those listed under there. Now, the discipline of doing this is quite important, because it puts discipline in the system. But our ensuring that we do what we are seeing in slide 24, in ensuring that these specific and exclusively appropriated amounts are adhered to, will actually remain a cornerstone of what we should be doing and we should encourage departments doing. Now, we are doing some reallocations and funding additions to various programs. Don't look at them line by line, but this is just a list of largest baseline reductions and largest additions in this appropriation bill. As indicated to the Joint Committee previously, PRASA, transport realignment, other capital programs of 2.4 billion, rolling stock 1.8 billion, COCTA municipal infrastructure grant, national health insurance grant, all of those subtractions, this is basically realignment to some of the programs that are on your right, whereby we actually transferring or adding to baselines. And all of this, honourable members, was as a result of some of the things that we don't have control over, in particular Eskom as an example, where debt obligations and recapitalization was necessary. We did say before that SANRAL, and we took money from non-toll network infrastructure of almost 2 billion. Same as basic education, we have to construct those schools and school refurbishment. Eradication of pit latrines, as I said earlier, including all the what's in the list. Now, SARS, it's interesting because that 300 to 400 million is just not enough if you look at SARS and the operation. So that's a classic example of later on where more additions will be needed, because the capacity of SARS eroded over time, meant they had lots of surpluses, and in the last couple of years, we've just been slicing off SARS budget. Now, if SARS is beginning to reestablish itself, we need to actually assist them to go back to where they were in order for them to collect more. So that's one of the things, the balancing act that we have to make at any given point in time. Slide number 26 is basically going to a little bit of detail of what I said, including slide 27 and including what is in slide 28 in terms of the reallocation. So, honourable members, this is insofar as the appropriation bill is concerned. But I also thought, let me take you quickly, briefly through section 16 that makes provision for funding in an emergency situation. And we had to obviously do that for ESCOM. We've done it before, previously in the last two financial, in the last 2 years ago, for SAA, when we had to repay some of the loans or meeting the obligations that they had. Because if not, these institutions and the challenge they have, especially most state-owned companies, we have an environment where we've guaranteed the loans that they made. In a way, we are saying, as a state, if such and such an entity cannot meet their obligations, we will step in. And it's instances like this where we need to step in. But in stepping in this time around for Eskom, it meant Eskom would not have met the obligations at the time when they needed that, sometime early in the year. It started as a bridging finance that they got from one of the banks, Absa in particular, and that report, we can make it available, Chair, is available. The Fifth Administration Parliament got that report, and I think we should also make it available if the committee members don't have the report, because in terms of Section 16, we should, within 14 days after doing such, we should inform Parliament, and we did at the time inform Parliament. So we said that as part of this process and more money needed for Eskom, we'll submit a special appropriation for consideration, which we did yesterday. And we said at the time, it's important to also note slide number 3, that there were commitments based on the funding strategy of Eskom, that they were expecting resources to come through. This is not a loan at the time. It was part of the funding strategy where the China Development Bank had committed to disburse $7 billion, and they were not by the time, because they were not sure as to where Eskom is going, and subsequent to that, after engaging with them, they were able to pass on these resources through. And again, we tried other measures, bullet number 3, with the Corporation for Public Deposits at the Reserve Bank. We were not able to, because at the time it did not make sense from where we were at. But in particular, in some cases, as a bridging mechanism, we use the CPD many a times. And for us to use the CPD, we don't have to parliament. It's a cash flow management issue. But in this instance, it was not going to work. It was actually going to be illegal, because they were not guaranteed money from their operations. So as a contingency measure at the time, on the 2nd of April, we had a quick engagement with Absa Capital, and they were able to supply, at the time it was just $3 billion, and it was backed by a government guarantee that we had to do on an urgent basis. But we thought by doing just $3 billion, that's where we do the maximum allowable amount in law, which was at $17.652 billion, knowing that later on the balance will only come through once the appropriation bill is passed. So slide number, I'm messing up the slides. We didn't number them properly. But again, it's a slide titled Section 16 of the PFMA in terms of what it says, and we list the provision thereof and what it says. And yeah, all of them are either one or two. Apologies for that, honourable members. But as I said, we embarked on this provision. We will rectify it once the, it's not new money, as I said, but it's part of the $23 billion. As soon as appropriation bill is approved, we will then have to make this good, and we wouldn't obviously have to worry about it anymore. So finally, insofar as Eskom support is concerned, we have tabled, and again, it's not for this meeting today, we have just tabled the special appropriation bill, and one imagines that it will have its own process of looking into. So this, honourable members, is what we are putting through to as a recommendation for the bill to be approved based on the spending items, and we therefore request Parliament to approve or give us a spending authority to ensure that we spend in terms of the law beyond 31st of July. Thank you very much.
Thank you, honorable member. Can I request members to comment on the presentation that we know? I think because of the issues that are in the public space as a result of what happened yesterday, I also have a question that I want you to clarify. But I'll allow members first to comment on the issues, but not restarting the debate. Thank you. Okay, Honorable Mkhule.
No, thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to everyone. DG, thank you so much for that wonderful presentation and quite an eye-opener. And I'm just rising to appreciate the fact that you have gone beyond what you have prepared here on the paper and explain exactly challenges confronting us as a country and how we can mitigate them. And I like the robustfulness of saying that with what we are investing, we can actually use it to our advantage and begin to change our manner of doing things. So I'm saying that I was still listening in appreciation and how I wish that you could even go to town, but I understand the time limits. And I think, Chairperson, we fully support this and we endorse that we should go ahead and give the Treasury Department the support that they require. And we will emphasize, DG, the issue of transformation going forward, that it must come quite very strongly. We understand that if the economy is not growing, it is difficult to ensure that transformation perspective is realized. But in your planning, if you can employ creative leadership and ensure that the picture begins to change in terms of doing things going forward. So we fully support DG. Chairperson, I will end at that and once again and say much appreciation for this.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Vida.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I was, I don't want to try and take up your job, but I would have thought that in the best way to discuss this would probably be to have the report, our report tabled. Sorry, Chair. I just feel that discussing this presentation and then taking our report, there's going to be a lot of overlaps. So I was wondering if we shouldn't have the report presented first and then have interactions. Well, we're going to do a second round after that.
I think our report is the final stage of this process, because we've been part of the process of the presentations, engagement, clarity-seeking questions, and all that. So from this item, we go to the report, and when we deal with the report, that will be a reflection of our view or what we resolve on as a committee. But before we go to that, I just want to make sure that we're done with this item from Treasury. You can come in.
Thank you, Chair. Then, okay, then I'll give some of my inputs now then. Thank you very much. I want to appreciate the presentation. Thank you very much. And once again, what's being presented to us is kind of almost a fait accompli. And it's a case of this is a legacy of the Fifth Parliament, so you'd better put it through because that's where we're at and we've got a time constraint on us at the moment. And I'm a little uncomfortable with that, and understanding it's an election year and all of those things, but it doesn't mean that we shouldn't be doing our jobs. And specifically, I want to pick on a point that the DG made when he got to that issue of reallocation and funding additions. The phrase that he used, he said, these are things that we don't have control over. And I want to say we absolutely do have control over these things. We are the Select Committee on Appropriations. So we're not here to do the executive's bidding. We're not here to take a budget that's been approved or been put forward by the executive and rubber stamp it and put it through. We're here to make good recommendations and try to make sure that South Africa is protected. And I'm not saying that the executive is working against South Africans. I think on the contrary, I believe we have a new executive that has good intentions. However, we need to make sure that things like, and specifically things that we don't have control over, giving a whole bunch of money to Eskom, to SAA, to SANROL, these are issues that we've highlighted over the past couple of weeks, and giving that money out and saying, well, you know, you're in trouble, here's more money, and good luck, is highly inappropriate. Giving money out should come with conditions, especially when we're seeing the money being given out at the cost of other things. As we know, there's a finite budget. The pot is only so big. So we taking money away somewhere in order to give it elsewhere. To do that without putting specific conditions on those disbursements is massively problematic. And we as the Appropriations Committee are best placed to insist that some sort of conditions get attached to these disbursements. And if there are conditions, well, it should be made clear to us so that we understand and we can be taken on board. So we absolutely do have control. And I think that we need to make sure that we understand that we have that control. And specifically as a select committee, it was mentioned again yesterday in brief, but the role of the NCOP is partly to focus on the provincial aspect of government, but it also retains that Senate oversight role, where we make sure that the National Assembly has done things correctly. We are not merely, and the comment was made in a speech yesterday, which I thought was highly appropriate, we can't be a better NA than the NA. We have a distinct and different role. So I wanted to make that point quite strongly. The DG spoke about SCOA, and I think I wanted to highlight that because I think it's one of the issues that came through quite strongly in the presentations. Remember, when you say SCOA in this forum, it means Select Committee on Appropriations. But no, Standard Charter of Accounts across the board. I think the implementation of that is imperative, and we saw it specifically with the presentation from the PBO, where they had those spider webs of disbursements, and they were saying, well, you know, this is where the money's going, and then we kind of almost lose track of it. So you know, it's being sent to a department, to an entity, and then to a province, or to a province and then to an entity, etc. And kind of we're not able to work out exactly if that spending is being done correctly or not. Chair, yeah, the rest of my points largely have to do with the report, and I will certainly delve into those as we get on to the next item. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Raida. Honourable Karim.
All right. Oh, there is one, yeah. Okay, thank you very much. Firstly, I mean, I don't think Dennis should think it's just the DA that's concerned about rubber stamping. We all are. If for no other reason, there's no majority party which is sliding is going to sit back now and be complacent. So even if it's self-motivated, like any political party wants to get re-elected, whatever our reasons, we're definitely going to be far more effective in our oversight, as indeed the powers that be in the parliamentary houses, the two houses, are urging us, as indeed the ANC in Luthuli House is urging us. Whatever the reasons, we're all going to be far more effective, as I'm sure the DG with all his experience knows. So on rubber stamping, I think we agree. You see, nothing stops us in our report from saying that we're ill at ease about processing this appropriations bill, given the gravity of what is being put here. This is a very austere bill, DG. And, you know, as parliamentarians, we can't fold our arms and say, well, you know, it's all hunky-dory and fine, and we understand. No, that's not our job. Nor is the minister or the DG saying that either. So I think in our report, nothing stops us from saying that the committee feels ill at ease about having had to process this appropriations bill with such speed, understanding the circumstances. Nothing stops us, if the majority exists, from saying to urge Parliament to ensure that when the government chooses a date of elections, it is slightly more sensitive, if not more sensitive, to the fact that a budget has to be approved by the end of July. So when we have elections, we should take that into account. It's not fair on parliamentarians. We can even say that. Nothing stops us. Thirdly, I think I understand Dennis's frustration, but there are two impulses here about why this process is going ahead the way it is. One is that actually we have the elections, and then the ANC took very long to decide on our chair. There's nothing inevitable about it. We took very long. You can't blame the executive for that. The ANC took up to 3 weeks to decide. And it's not something we should hide. It's out there. The peasants in Mongolia know it. It's in the media. Right? All the fumbling and floundering. Well, what's the point of hiding it? My mother, who can't read English and watches TV, knows it, right? So, I mean, really, what are we hiding? The ANC must also take some measure of responsibility. And if nobody else wants to say it, I'm saying it. We took 3 to 4 weeks to decide on our chairperson, which also held the process up. It's in the media. Google it. All the other parties submitted their names. I think two of us did, the ANC and one other. That also held up the process. So, when last we had the election in May, that was in 2014, May 7th, we had more time because the ANC was swifter and more united about who the chairperson should be. So, you know, the point I want to make is there's a second impulse for this. Most of the members here are new, including the DA. So even if we had more time, with due respect to everybody, I mean, you know, the technical skills are not here with us. They're with the staff who do their best under difficult circumstances. So it's not going to happen again, Dennis. Not going to happen again. We won't allow it. The chair won't allow it. I'm confident. I know the chair very well. She won't allow it, right? She's no limp, servile sort of puppet of anybody. I know her well enough. She's got a trade union background. And certainly some of us here, we all are quite, as the DG knows, and the parliamentary, wonderful parliamentary liaison, not that the DG is not wonderful, but by any parliamentary liaison officer, let me tell you, she's about the best that I have experienced, and I should know. I've dealt with six different structures. So, now, on the conditions for dispersal, I think Dennis is being unfair, really. I think the DG must reply as he wants. But to be quite frank, from what I saw on TV last night, and what I read in this morning's media fleetingly, the minister made it clear. If you know the current minister, he is very loath to give half a cent to anybody, right? I mean, he's the worst minister you could have, forget Trevor Manuel, for foregoing even a half a penny, right? So he's made it clear that there are conditions. Where Dennis is right, we need a clearer set of conditions. We cannot understand why you cannot have DG, with due respect, the chief restructuring officer announced in the House. Why does it have to take an extra day? I mean, surely you knew for weeks now, right? So, I mean, that's not acceptable by any measure. Comrades, you don't need a study group of the ANC to get a consensus on that. And people can fire me if they don't agree with me as a majority. But, hey, that's not acceptable. And why don't we say it in our report, Chairperson? What is the crime? Why can't they announce the chief restructuring officer? Because, quite frankly, if you're serious about conditions, DG, the quality of the restructuring officer is crucial. You get some credibility, and Dennis is forestalled from saying what he said. If you say, here's the money, but hey, here's the condition, spell it out. Now, it's not Dennis as if this is very new. Our committee, the finance committee, has been saying it repeatedly. I think if you look at our reports on the fiscal framework or the amended fiscal framework, I think we've been doing it for years. Ask the parliament, she's nodding her head in agreement. Not because she's my buddy, but because she reads those reports, and so does the DG. What I'm saying, DG, is we understand, and we, you know, we feel terrible that somebody as young as you, your hair's going to never come back, right, has to be the, it's the most difficult time to be a DG of Treasury. No one envies you this job. In fact, I suspect the job is advertised like the ESCOM CEO, nobody's going to apply to, right? But, you know, we wish you well, DG. We have a lot of respect for you, right? But you've been thrown in at the deep end. Ever since you became the DG, it's been like, you know, and you're doing very well. As far as I'm concerned, and I'm sure my chairperson agrees with me, you're doing a great job, DG, and you're young, and it's wonderful to see that, you know, somebody like you will acquire so much of experience, right? So when the economy goes at 13%, you'll have been contributing to it, right? So what I'm saying, my brother, DG, that look, we understand the condition, circumstances in which you are. We don't feel that. You know, I always say that given, you know, the difficult circumstances we face, the technical quality of the Treasury is remarkable. The juggling act you do, very, very few ministries, departments in my knowledge, anywhere in the world confronting the challenges we do, would do such a brilliant exercise. I don't agree with your ideology, you understand it, right, often, and the policy decisions you make, but speaking of the technical quality of your work, it is world-class, actually. World-class, that's my view. Really, very few departments of Treasury would do it. Okay, we're running out of time. You get the drift. Okay, thank you.
Okay, Honorable Karim, I think we're not running out of time. I wanted to let you speak and confirm more of your bodies that you didn't know. I was not aware that Cindy is your body. And knowing you, you were going to release more information. But on a serious note, I think, Honorable Ryder, most of the things that you're saying, I understand why you were confused about whether we have to start with the report and deal with the report or this entertain this presentation, because the issues that you are raising, we have discussed them and they are captured in the report as resolutions. And some of the issues, we will deal with them, taking from where Honorable Karim is saying that looking at the time that we had, we didn't have the luxury of time. But come the next process where we're going to deal with the bill, all these things that we're raising that we need to correct and also relook at the mandate, our focus as the NCOP needs to be stressed and be an item for discussion at the higher authority, because we have looked at ourselves and discussed amongst ourselves and thought, we think also as an oversight body in the NCOP, we might not be doing what is expected to do, but there is this legislation that is guiding us that needs to be looked into and all other processes. But for now, we're dealing with this bill that is before our table, before us. DG, from me, after the presentation of yesterday, I'm happy you have presented the Section 16. You have made a presentation about the Section 16. I think, I don't know, maybe it's my interpretation. The notion out there that is being displayed is that yesterday in the NA, the Minister, Honorable Didon Bowene, have presented the special bill and it was adopted. And that is not my understanding. I will appreciate, Honorable DG, if you clarify that for everybody to understand that yesterday's process was to deal with this bill and only the Section 16. And if we approve this bill, we will be dealing with the balance of the 23 billion, because the 17 billion has been paid off. So the special bill will be focusing on the outer years that we will be focusing on, and where we will have enough time to get input also on the conditions, if we are not happy with the conditions that are given now. Because we have been in every meeting been stressing the issue of the conditions. We have been raising the issue of taking money from non-toll to e-tolling and all those things. How does this impact on the rural or the most disadvantaged or the vulnerable ones? So I just want you to clarify that so that we know what we are doing and we don't mix issues. Thank you, DG.
Thank you very much, Chair. Maybe let me start with the last point and correctly indicate that the understanding that we have is that, and it was coincidental that we are asking, the first reading of the special appropriation bill had to be yesterday. It could have been other time. So it's just a coincidence. Yesterday's process essentially, and we have specifically asked Parliament to request that we use the 23rd to use that to pass, to table the special appropriation bill. So Parliament agreed on the day that the appropriation bill, this appropriation bill that we're presenting to you has been considered. So that's point number one. So, and you are correct, Chair, that the 17 billion that's already paid is part of the 23, and the balance of 5 can only be paid once this bill, appropriation bill, is passed by the House and assented to by the President. So the 5 billion cannot be passed until the President signs. The special appropriation bill is specifically for ESCOM, whereby we're requesting 59 billion rand additional, and that's why the title of the special appropriation bill spells out clearly to say that it's additional to what was being requested in this bill. So additional in that we are requesting for 1920 financial year 26 billion and 33 billion for 2021. Now the processing of that bill based on parliamentary process is totally going to be, has got nothing to do with yesterday's or this today's discussion. It was for yesterday tabling, and the normal processes of processing a special appropriation bill will still be undertaken by Parliament. So, and one understands, and we will learn from the discussion in terms of Honourable Ryder's point and Honourable Karim's point about conditions, that as we process, therefore, this special appropriation bill through normal parliamentary processes, that we don't come to you blunt without saying these are the conditions that you've outlined. And what we will then also take to heart, by the way, and taking the confidence of the committee, taking into account the committee's concerns and taking the committee in confidence later on, is to actually bring these conditions through for your attention to the committee. And we will do that. And if you look at whether it's SAA, DENEL, SAA, they are there. SABC, for instance, on the 27th of April, I wrote to them, and the SABC chair, and I wrote to the DG in the department, and in there we've outlined 11 conditions in my letter. Say, you shall do this, that, and that, and that. Based on this, we will then consider a guarantee. Now, you will have picked up, and this again was reported incorrectly in the press, suggesting that the SABC is at war with the Minister of Communications. That was not the case. All that the Minister was doing was agreeing with us because we had refused to give SABC a guarantee based on the request that they had, because they, one, did not meet some of the obligations that they knew they had to fulfill as per my letter of April. And secondly, the business case was not strong enough. So as a responsible treasurer, we were saying a guarantee can only be given that you are doing your business as normal, and if you are going to be successful, then there's no need for a call on the guarantee. So the financial analysts that sit with these issues and consider the financial ratios and matrices of any state-owned company says, Minister, DG, you cannot approve a guarantee. And based on that, we agreed and we wrote to them and saying, no guarantee. Minister agreed with us because we are not happy with the business case that they were putting, including meeting some of the conditions. Minister then, I'm just using this as an example. Minister then, in Boweni yesterday, says, we will, part of the appropriation bill that you are considering today, inherent in there, we're saying we'll use money from the contingency reserve to fund SABC, DENEL, and SAA. The reason we are only doing these things is it will be illegal if I put in GCTA or State Diamond Company, and because as per the agreed regulatory processes, no allocation can be afforded if Minister of Finance did not mention it in the House when he presented the appropriation bill in February. So that's why we made sure that he announced these things by name and say in the course of the year. So that makes it, gives us the authority to can, through the appropriation process, including later in the MTVPS, to fund the three entities. So he said yesterday that for us to pass any portion of the 3.2 billion, we will want to be satisfied that they have met certain conditions. And we know they are meeting some of them. One of the
and all of them would have been soft. Finalize the board, and the parliament has done that as part of my 11 conditions. Make sure that you identify, non-core functions and activities and get rid of them, stop them, or including non-performing sectors of the SABC, list them. And so all of those things are part of parcel of what we are going to be taking into consideration as we disburse essentially what is will be part of the 3.2 billion, because the total request is for 3.2 billion. So there are conditions, and we can, I think, as I say, at a later stage, we'll have to at least make available some of these conditions, including how the idea, honorable members, if you look at ESCOM, for instance, the idea was that we announced the chief restructuring officer with set responsibilities and set terms of reference and certain targets that he must meet. But unfortunately, as Honorable Karim indicated, that it's unacceptable, agreed that we will obviously, executive must firm up and make available, known, available, the chief restructuring officer, not only, by the way, for ESCOM, but also, as Minister indicated, for all of these other state-owned companies that are part and parcel of this list, whether it's Denel, SABC, and SAA. So it therefore becomes urgent that we appoint those, and therefore it also becomes urgent that we make available to the committee and to the members broadly some of the conditions are outlined. And finally, Chair, I would like to, with all the humility, recognize and welcome the accolades bestowed on the National Treasury and the kind of work we do. Honorable Karim is correct. It is under a very difficult environment that we operate, only because tax revenues are not coming through. There's no growth, but however, we are faced with unlimited demand for now on the fiscus, challenges by state-owned companies. And we may be seen by many as South Africans saying that we may be reckless and bailing out all the time. But the reality is that I don't think it should be seen as bailout, purely as bailout, just giving money. It is the obligations and the impact that if we don't, and that's where I think maybe Honorable Rada did misunderstand my point about we cannot do anything about. We can do a lot of things. We can close some of them. We can sell. We can reorganize. We can do a number of things. But based on current guarantee conditions and framework, if any of these state-owned companies have to default on the obligations as per the state guarantee that we issued, then we have a problem, in a bigger problem in our hands. There could be a call on the guarantee in terms of legally the call that they have the right, the lenders have the right, and there can be a possibility of cross defaults across the number of contingent liability portfolio that we have. And the lenders and all the bondholders of both ESCOM and our bondholders will be correct, because some of the clauses that we have talks to the total health, financial health of the economy. That's why sometimes we really seem to be focused on rating agencies and in particular Moody's to try and make sure that we explain ourselves in a way that we do and really keep the storyline that suggests that we have, and I mentioned in passing earlier on, to say South Africa is not a failing state. We are not about to become a failed state. We have got all the fundamentals in place. All we are doing is just a dip in our growth challenges. And we know there are certain, Honorable Chair, growth-enhancing measures and issues that we think we must move fast on to start igniting the economy. And the conversation within the state currently is that we have to do these things and do it quick and faster, because clearly there's potential to grow the economy. The challenge that we have is growth. If we have to grow at anything between 2, 3, 4% or 13%, as Honorable Karim suggests, I will be happy. We have proven that we can do it, and we've seen that early there before the global financial crisis, that we can grow at 5 or 6% if we have to do the right things. But the reality is that, like any developing country, emerging economy, we'll have our own developmental challenges. You have seen the challenge. We know the story of South Africa, all of us, and I'm not ranting, but we know the story and the challenges, and we know that it took 25 years, and this is a point, whether we like it or not, 25 years is too short a period for us to match countries like, you know, the U.S., 300-year-old democracies, the U.K., Sweden, Norway, all of those. We will definitely have our challenges, like we're picking them up every day, whether it's looking at the Zondo Commission or PIC Commission, or even the challenges that we have in the Treasury and the kind of stuff turned over, etc., because people have to move on. And we have to constantly build teams that can stand the test of time, including systems and institutions that can stand the test of time. So the reality is that small as we are as a democracy, we have to continuously do the right things. That you have staff in government, in DGs, in chief directors, in DDGs, who are able to actually manage the state in a way that service delivery is achieved or management of public finances above board. That's a challenge that we continue. We have seen, we never had these challenges 10 years ago in state-owned companies that we're having now. But that clearly tells you that as we don't grow a pipeline of capable South Africans, capable public servants, to take some of these things, it can be a challenge. So I don't think, and I always tell my team, that don't be too hard on yourself when we cannot do certain things. The challenges that we are building, and building a democracy like the country that we work for or we are in, 25 years is not. And I've seen that in the Treasury, that you had excellent public servants 20 years ago. You had excellent public servants 5 years ago, and most of them had to move on. So we continuously have to build as we move. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DG. I hope your responses have clarified us more, but I know there are some enticement and has triggered some more engagement. We will still have other sessions. We will have you to engage. But for now, I think we are done with the presentation, and we want to thank you very much, together with your team, as Treasurer. Thank you very much. Following our program, honorable members, we go to the next item, which is the report. It's written the draft report of the Select Committee on Appropriations on the Appropriation Bill, B6B 2019, National Assembly, Section 77, dated 24th July 2019. This draft report was electronically sent to members, and members were requested to comment on the report if they feel not enough has been said here, or make proposals or amendments. And when I check with Estelle, nothing has been received. But I will still give members an opportunity to talk to the report so that the report reflects the actual standing or view of the committee as a whole. I will go page by page. There's only one page, actually two pages. When I say page by page, it's not like a book, it's just a two-page report. So I will start with page one of our report. Members, anything on page one? Page two. Okay, honorable writer. I must always read your body language. Sometimes you...
Yeah, Chair, I thought when I received the email last evening when I got home after a long sitting in the house, I thought I'd respond by putting as much effort into my reply as was put into putting the report together. So, which is why I'm here today to give verbal inputs. That might be a bit unfair. Chair, I think that following deliberations over the last 3 weeks, we've gone into a lot of detail. There's been a lot of discussion, and to come up with only two recommendations out of all of those discussions, I think is a little bit unfair. We've had many inputs into this bill, and the two recommendations came out of the same meeting, which was held in this room last week. That was kind of it. So I certainly believe that there are a number of things that need to be added to the recommendations, and if I may make so, I think maybe I'm going to list issues. I don't think we need to rediscuss all of the issues because they were discussed at those meetings. So I'm going to highlight the themes and request that perhaps these get issued. Thank you. Good. So I think that one of the first issues that came out is the consistent theme that came through of shifting money from service delivery areas to basically fund state capture or flailing projects, be it Eskom, so shifting money to Eskom, shifting money from PRASA to SANRAL was one of the issues that was highlighted and debated at length, etc., etc. And the fact that Honourable Karim Yunus mentioned just now, austerity, this is an austere budget, and it really is. We're shifting money from basic service delivery to make sure that we cover our commitments that have come about as a result of years of careless spending. So I do think that needs to be highlighted in our recommendations, that we make sure that this is not an ongoing theme, and that money that is allocated to service delivery needs to be spent on service delivery and not underspent. The other, the next item in terms of the recommendation, I know that we had a presentation on departments that had underspent, and in spite of having had appropriations, they had been left with large amounts that were underspent, and it was some key departments, and I think that the departments of police and health and education were amongst those mentioned on that. And I think that we need to again make a recommendation that departments that are given money must make sure that they spend it and spend it properly. The next recommendation ties in directly with that, and it relates to that Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. And I don't think we agreed or concluded or even investigated, but I do think that we need to discuss it going forward, whether the DPME needs to be brought into Treasury or not, because that's one thing for a department to spend 100% of its budget, but is it spending it correctly? And I think that's something that also needs to be taken into account when we're giving more funds next time. You know, you've only achieved 66% in terms of your programs, but you've spent 100% of your budget. You can't expect to be rewarded by that. You actually need to refocus. So I think a discussion needs to be held going forward about the DPME and how that fills in. I realize that it does directly have a role to play where it is currently housed with the Public Services Department, but I think the Treasury also needs to have at least a report from them and some interaction going forward. The issues of land reform, I did note that we received an email of a submission that was sent through a little bit late, but I do think it's worth reporting on. There was a gentleman that tabled a letter saying that land reform is one thing, but please can there also be some budgeting made for training and follow-up, perhaps some equipment, etc., etc. I think it would be useful to include that. Then there was quite a debate held on NHI. And Treasury indicated that they were a little uncomfortable with the funding aspects of NHI, and yet, you know, the NHI is being kind of pushed forward. So I do think that we also need to perhaps ask Treasury or put a recommendation forward that Treasury comes back to us with their concerns, and that the affordability of NHI be carefully considered going forward. The underfunding of local government was discussed at length, the fact that they only get 9% of the national fiscus allocated to them, and the fact that many of these local governments are floundering, possibly as a result of incompetence, but possibly also as a result of underfunding, and that funding needs to be reviewed going forward, certainly. focus on infrastructure. We had a very nice presentation. I went back upstairs and got all of the old presentations out because I thought it was important just to remind myself of what had been discussed. And the fact that that infrastructural development needs to be focused on. The phrase that I used when I spoke about it was that we're looking for catalytic developmental events. And I think, you know, infrastructure leads growth, growth leads jobs, jobs leads more demand for more infrastructure, and so the circle continues. Right, then the concerns raised by the contracting economy, the presentation included issues around agriculture, mining and manufacture that had caused a massive dip in the GDP in the first quarter. And the question was raised as a result of that, if this is a Hail Mary budget. I know that we said there's a 3% increase in baseline, but we are suffering from a contracting economy, and therefore our collections through SARS is going to be under pressure. So I think as a result of that, perhaps the recommendation we need to come out with there is the fact that SARS needs to really focus on its work, be empowered within its work, and also get over the issues that are plaguing it at the moment. I think they are largely through the internal battles that they've been fighting, but the fact is that SARS needs to focus carefully on ensuring that they can deliver on their side of the bargain, because appropriations is only one half of the story. Another recommendation I'd like to suggest relates to the fact that it's been pointed out several times that the appropriation, the budget is not talking to SONAR, neither SONAR 1 or 2 of this year, and there are issues that still need to come out, obviously, to address that. I understand as well that the adjustments budget or the next budget is going to deal with the reallocation of departments. And then, of course, I presume new ministers, hopefully, are going to establish a whole lot of new programs within each of their departments. We also spoke about the fact that that must not have a cost impact; that should actually be cost savings. Was one of the issues highlighted there. I think that Kasatu's point was quite strongly held by everybody, the fact that funding to social development in terms of boosting capacity in, for drug rehab, I think, was the main one that they issued. But all sorts of similar NGO-type organizations in terms of women protection of victims of women abuse, child abuse, etc., etc., and I think that Kasatu's point was well made there, and one of the rare occasions that we agree. Not that rare, I'm pulling your leg. I think, again, I wanted to just highlight that SCOA issue, that funding also needs to be made available for SCOA at the various levels, because one needs to spend money in order to ensure that these things are landed properly. And the DG mentioned MSCOA. Coming out of a municipal environment, I know that the costs of implementation of that are fairly substantial, and we need to make sure that those are covered both at a municipal level and elsewhere where we are implementing standard charters of accounts. Chair, I am covered with that. Thank you very much.
I think so far you have rewritten the report. Well done, Mr. Ryder. And I think, let me appreciate one thing, that before I get into what you have said, what I appreciate is that you focus more on what we are supposed to focus on, the content, on what is before us, the bill, and you are not politicizing the whole issue. This is what I appreciate about this team, that we are very focused. But having said that, some of the issues, according to me, but I don't want to impose it to the committee. Members of the committee will talk to your proposals and refine, because some of the issues will be covered in minutes, and the report will not reflect each and everything. The recommendations should be brought in terms of what we are recommending going forward, not a reflection of what we have raised as a concern, but recommendation is part of the solution. What we recommend the department or treasury should be as a way of resolving going forward. I'm going to allow members to speak to the 10 proposed recommendations from Honorable Ryder. Members? Honorable Karen?
I think one appreciates that Dennis went to such extent in making all these proposals. and many of them one could agree with, although one might want to formulate it slightly differently. Now, the first thing is about process, right? Where is the National Assembly report on the appropriations bill? They do a separate report, is that right? So because those issues might be covered there. And if they are, the committee can simply say on this side that we agree with the proposals in that report, and in particular draw attention to, you know, the issues that Dennis raises, right? I mean, you know, like if it's recommendation 5, we'll say recommendation 5, recommendation 7, and so on. And you know, we can mandate, because we have a deadline, we can mandate the secretaries and the content advisor to do that, right, based on what he has said. Secondly, I think there might be some value in putting a paragraph above 3, paragraph 2, which says something like this: the committee expresses its reservations about having to process this bill in onerous circumstances, given that the bill had to be passed by the end of July, and it followed immediately after an election. These circumstances are nowhere near ideal, something like that, and this will obviously not recur. But in future, those who decide, the government decides the election, will have to take this into account, something like that. If there's a broad agreement on that, I'm willing to draft it, you know, but if the content advisors want to do it, I'm cool about it. It's not my job to do it, but since I'm opening my big mouth and we're about to vote on a report, the procedure has been...
Big and useful?
Sorry?
Big and useful.
Sorry?
Big and useful.
What's big and useful? I'm not... Sorry? No. Oh, yeah, okay, right. You're being rude, but at the same time... Okay, fine. I'm disappointed in your commentary. All right, the second point I wanted to say is, you see, if somebody looks at this, they might work out how could you have extensively deliberated and voted on a report in a few hours, right? So I think, Lubabalo, under 3, Chairperson, think about this, colleague. After having considered all the submissions and extensively deliberating together with the Standing Committee on Appropriations, just add those words so it makes it clear. Because somebody, you know, a researcher or somebody might look at it and say, what extensive deliberation they do. But you do mention earlier that, you know, we did it jointly. But, you know, people might forget. Some people just turn to recommendations. It might be useful to say that. Then, on Dennis's point, I didn't say that this is austerity. I said it's an austere economic climate. There's a big difference between the two. You can have a very austere economic climate, but you can still have a very poor budget. You can still have counter-cyclical measures and so on. So I haven't said that. Is the view of the DA, I know, but it's not my view and it's not our party's. We think it's an austere economic climate. We're not saying it's an austerity budget. The other thing to say in response to Dennis is I think some of the issues he raises, in fact, all of them are good issues. I don't think there's a major difference, Dennis. But they fall within the fiscal framework. They don't belong to this. And they have been covered in the fiscal framework. So I would suggest process-wise that in future, when we are processing the appropriations bill and division of revenue, we distribute to members on the side the fiscal framework And also we distributed them the report that the Standing Committee on Appropriations adopted so that we see what's there. And then we're not going to duplicate. I also think you are right, Comrade Chair. Our report should focus more on provincial dynamics. So, for example, do we really care as an NCOP how much of money is being allocated to international relations? We only care insofar as some of that money could be used for the provinces, yes, but we don't really want to comment on that. So, you know, for our own purposes, we need to do more of what the NCOP is required to do, as we agreed yesterday, rather than duplicating what the NA does. On the issue of, I mean, who could disagree with Dennis if I understand him to be saying, his second point, you see, his second point is basically talking of quality of spending. He's saying also when you move money from one vote to another or within one vote, there has to be a clearer explanation of why you're doing it. And I don't think anybody's going to disagree with that. You know, the next point that he makes is the one that I think we'll find very hard to agree with. And remember, Parliament cannot prescribe to the executive. Dennis, we've raised this before. Somebody like Cindy Jinwala herself was very committed to parliamentary oversight. She made it clear there are certain things you cannot instruct the executive. And we got legal opinion on it. You can ask your chief whip to locate it in the mid-90s. But you can't instruct the government, as I understand it, where to put a particular department. You can merely recommend. You know, like sometimes we, for example, just to alert people, we constantly recommend it, and we still feel strongly, in fact, we'd like to pass a law on this thing, an interministerial task team for illicit financial flows, right? Now, here's the man, Advocate Jenkins, I think we consulted. You cannot prescribe, so we write it in softer words. We say, we seriously ask the executive to consider. Yeah. We can say, we plead with the executive to consider next time around, Comrade Chair. That's all we can do. We can't ask them to do it. So as far as DPME going into the Treasury, you can't do that. But moreover, I have a problem, and I'm sure most of us in the ANC would. You see, the Department of Monitoring and long term, right? Right. Now, it's not only a financial matter. It's a governance matter. Fundamentally, most of our problems are governance problems. If we governed properly the boards of SOEs, if we governed properly in every other sphere, it's more likely we will save money and the quality and efficiency of spending would improve. So to put DPME in here would be, I think, Dennis, with due respect to you, a wrong thing to do. It must remain in the presidency because it looks at government as a whole. The other problem, Dennis, is going to be begging to tell the DG who you think you are. Okay, you control the purse strings, but you're not superior to me as a DG. It's different, however, if you, in the presidency, you have some leverage. Am I right, DG? They will tell the Minister of Finance, who do you think you are? Okay, you control the money, but you're not superior to me. I'm the Minister of Home Affairs, that sort of thing. So I don't think we're going to agree with that. But the majority of us, I don't think that's the proposal he's making we must agree with. Maybe better coordination between the Department and Treasury. That's fine. But we shouldn't reduce their role to a financial management role. It's a governance thing, essentially, as I see it. Right? On the issue of NHI, I'm not sure what Dennis is saying, but as far as we are concerned, we've said it before, and the Health Committee says it also. We agree, the minister himself, the previous minister was repeatedly saying this, with serious challenge, I think the current minister says it, serious challenges in the public sector. But what the argument of government, I think, is that we can't wait till you sort that out. By starting to roll out NHI, you're also going to attend to this. Those are the government's incentives for Parliament to what Dennis is saying. There we can tweak what he's saying. On infrastructure, what is it we're saying that's new, my friend? Dennis, nothing. So unless you're going to say something that's new, it's covered in all the reports, right? We all agree. The big thing about new infrastructure now, which they introduced, is this notion of how you manage the project and so on, which you brought in. Then on the relationship between SONA, remember the SONA that we got now, that came in July, is a SONA that's come after the appropriations, right? Then on SARS, again, it's there in 1,000. That falls under finance. It's about raising revenue and so on. Then I want to say finally, on contract the economy, that's also a fiscal framework issue. It's not an appropriations issue. So at least two of his 8 points fall into fiscal framework, if not three. At least one I don't think the ANC will agree with, but people must speak for themselves here. I don't decide ANC policy, obviously. I'm expressing my own view. And at least four or five we can agree with, and we can quickly draft it. It's you see, Dennis has every right to raise all these issues. It's not his fault that we have to pass it today. So if we had normally functioned, Dennis, you would have sent your like we ask the DA to often do, send us your proposals. And then, you know, we include some in the report and others we reject. And then in the meeting, David Mania would say, well, I gave you 10, you only accepted 5. Then we explain why we don't accept the other 5. And then towards the end, we would note something or something. But what I'm saying in short is there no way you can compromise with Dennis? That is, that we're running out of time, but we have to vote on a report that's in words. Sometimes we do, you know, what you've done is, let's say if we had 13 recommendations in writing, and you had proposed 4, the committee could say, okay, you know what, we understand what it's saying, the chairperson will draft it with somebody, including the person making the proposal yourself. But now, there's 2 here, and you proposed 10. So that means we're going to sit here till evening. There is another proposal I've got, chairperson, that we note in the minutes, and we give Dennis the opportunity to send us a document by this afternoon. Chair, are you following? Sorry, I just want to
my apologies.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I want to make a proposal that we allow Dennis to write it all up, right? And when we, in another 10 weeks, when is the MTVPS coming? Have you got a date? In another 10 weeks. Sorry? There you are. If you exclude Parliament's constituency period, it's about another 7 weeks of sittings. We're going to have the adjustments to the appropriations bill, right? So what we do in fairness to him is we ask him to write all this up. We take 4 or 5 points, but he will write the whole 10 up, and we accommodate that in the report there to the extent we agree. Let's see, some of your issues that you're raising may be addressed in the adjustments appropriations. What we're pleading for is understanding. We're all in this bind. No one, in fact, there's very little, Comrade Chair, as you're rightly observing. He's saying we don't agree with it. Just a formulation here and there. And I'm not spinning. I mean, I'm being the record. You can even get the recording and play it back. Hey, you told us these things. Now you answer for it. And that chairperson's job is to ensure that we're not misleading you. There's very little you're saying we don't agree with, except at one point. So what I'm saying is, can't we compromise and put about 4 or 5 response in? The remainder we're not going to agree with. The other 2 go into fiscal framework, something like that. But we have to vote on the report today. There's no choice.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. As you see, I've been whispering with the support staff here. But before I get into that, there's a request that the DG has another commitment. And I said before I allow him to leave, did you, in your presentation, you committed to presenting a report to the members? Is it SOE report? Section 16. Okay. Okay, also the conditions. The conditions and the report. You spoke about 2 things. So what I'm requesting is that how soon do you think you can do that so that it is in record in our minutes? When we do the oversight, we can say, DG, you promised to avail this information to the committee members by this time, and it's not done. Or if it's done, then we can, within our program plan, when do we find it best to can engage you on the set information. Just a commitment from you and the release.
Thank you, Chair. No, the report we are providing today now. The conditions, as I indicated, I think we have tied them with the announcements of the CROs of various in terms of the original plan. So on that, I think maybe committee chair, if you can allow me that I confer that with the minister, and we can liaise with you in terms of, but what we can, there are obvious straightforward ones. For instance, the letter that I was talking about, on SABC that we can immediately make available to you so that you see the conditions that we have put for SABC in particular. That's not an issue. But other conditions, especially for ESCOM and others, we have tied them with the CRO process as part of the broader terms of reference. But those we can, you know, on a bilateral basis, engage with you once I've conferred to the Minister of Finance.
I think as soon as we come back from recess, we will be having those documents, or even if I get them before then, I will share them with members so that we can together decide when or how to deal with those if you want to entertain them. You are released, DG. As I was consulting with the staff here, Pelelani is also assisting, serving in the SCOA Standing Committee on Appropriation in the NA. And according to what he's saying, all these issues that the Honorable Ryder, if not most of them, are covered in the report. So, taking from what Honorable Karim was saying, can we agree that I think we have identified those that are not relevant to what we're dealing with, the bill, those that are relevant to the fiscal or are in relation to the fiscal matter. How many are left of the 10 that we can say we will consider and refrain them?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think the first point that Mr. Ryder raised with respect to shifting of funds from basic services from basic service delivery areas to fund struggling SOEs is the major one that is left, because others Mr. Karim has addressed. And that point, probably we can even either add a second point below, as a second point below A, or strengthen A by adding a sentence or two. So it is something that we can work on with colleagues, including with what Mr. Karim raised as his recommendation. I am not sure whether the chairperson and the committee might allow us, maybe give us, take a 15 to 20 minutes break so that we can work on those recommendations whilst members are stretching their legs, and then we'll flag the recommendation, then the committee can adopt the report.
I think that's a progressive suggestion, that we give them time to refine the recommendations, but I don't agree with the break. They can do that while we deal with the minutes. Remember, you and I, we have another commitment that we should attend to. So can we, members, do you agree that we give them 10 or so minutes? Honorable Ryder.
Chair, can I implore that the underfunding of local government gets highlighted as well. So just the fact that I'm going to accept that you chop most of my stuff down, I'll deal with that. But I am going to ask that we also highlight the fact that local government is currently underfunded, and this needs to be addressed going forward.
It's just a comment on that issue. I'm sorry, I forgot to comment about it. We don't have a problem if the committee agrees that we must add it. The only comment that I wanted to make is that next term we have a proposed schedule meeting wherein FFC, they are going to brief the committee on their submissions on the division of revenue. And I think the title of their submission focuses on local government issues. I think colleagues are here if there is a need to comment. So that will be also addressed fully during that process. It's an annual item that the committee normally have with the FFC. Thank you.
Okay, it's fine. Can we give them an opportunity to go? Honorable Karim?
section on process, I'm happy to do that. I will email it to Lubabalo and Estelle. I'll do that. It's a few lines about
now.
Process. Yeah. The one about, you know, we understand the situation within election year, and we feel uncomfortable about processing it so swiftly, but this won't happen, and we urge the powers that be in deciding on elections and the aftermath of it to take into account the onerous deadline and the money process.
Okay. I know you are a good writer and fast writer. You can just do that now.
I'll email it.
And multitask, yeah. Because we want the recommendations that they're going to work on to be reflected here so that it's presented to the committee. Thank you. Lebabalo, you can go and then recommendations to find that.
My team will do one.
Oh, they will do it.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Pelela?
Yeah, no, Chair, thanks. I wanted to say, Chair, the recommendation of the 9% allocation for local government, we can make it one recommendation with the MSCOA funding that Honourable Writer spoke about, because those are the interest of this committee as an NSOP committee, where you look at what is happening at the provincial level and at the local level. So the rest of the recommendations, some of them are covered in the National Assembly report, which this committee has been part of, and therefore we ought not to duplicate that process. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Karen?
We shouldn't just talk about giving more money. There has to be a dramatic improvement in the quality of the spending. Because National Treasury will say, what's the point of giving them more money? They don't spend it efficiently. So it's both allocating more money and more efficiently using that money.
There should be value for money. That emphasis. Okay, can you do that, Pelelani Anastel and the team, while we deal with the minutes? Honourable members, we are putting that on the parking bay. We'll come back to it. The first set of minutes, 3 July 2019. And also, I think members have received this minutes. I'll go, okay, page by page. The first page, anybody's surname wrongly spelled? Nothing, and there was no indication from the members as requested. Page 2. Page 3. Honorable.
I demand a recount.
Pardon?
I demand a recount.
You demand a recount?
Of the votes, I'm teasing, Jay.
Recount on what? We're not voting. Oh. You want to challenge me again? Okay. Page 3.
Sorry,
yes,
sir. Are you busy with the minutes of the 3rd of July or the 24th of June? There's a set of the 24th of June as well.
That's the one I was on.
I think that is why you are misunderstanding each other here.
No, it's fine. Thank you. Let's start with the 24th of June. First page, second page, third page. Can I get a mover? Honorable Riders moving, seconded by? Seconder, Honorable Ockham. Members, this is very interesting. Thank you so much, honorable members of the DA. You are transforming really the parliament. This is very interesting. So the minutes of the 3rd of July, first page, second page, third page, fourth page, fifth page, sixth page, seventh page, eighth page, ninth page, tenth page, and 11th page is the last one. A mover for the adoption. Thank you, honorable member.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I move the, for the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you. A seconder? Yes, member?
I second the honourable member for the adoption.
Thank you very much. The next set is the 9th of July, 2019. Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4 and 5, the last page. Can I get a mover? Honorable Zolan?
Chairperson, I would like to take this opportunity to move for the adoption of this minute.
Thank you. A seconder? Honorable member?
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Njadu, second.
Thank you, Honorable Njadu. The next set of meetings, 10th July, 2019, page 1. You can still participate, DA. Please. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4 and 5. A mover for the adoption of the minutes as a true reflection of the discussions. Honorable Ryder, I read your body language.
You should write a book, Jay. Yes, I will move for the adoption of the minutes.
So, a seconder, Honorable Zolani.
Chairperson, I would like to take this opportunity to to second the honorable writer.
Thank you. The next slide is the 16th of July, 2019, page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, and page 6, honorable members, the mover. Honorable Lillian?
For the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you, honorable member, for the move, and the seconder, honorable member.
Thank you, Chair. I move for seconding.
Thank you for seconding, honorable member. Minutes are moved and seconded. Now we now go to the 17th of July 2019, page 1. Page 2. And page 3. Honorable Okam. Can you...
Do propose that we adopt the minutes.
Thank you very much. A seconder. Honorable Karim. Thank you what?
I'm seconding.
Thank you very much for seconding, Honorable Karim.
I would sincerely hope that this would be the first of many times when the Honorable Karim is going to second what the Honorable Okam is saying. I would appreciate that.
I bumped into a Freedom Front MP, the member's interest.
Yeah.
And he told me that Mr. Alcom is a traitor for having joined the DA.
Sorry, I cannot be a traitor if I've never joined them before. Sorry.
So those are the things, side issues that will make this committee lively and interesting. Honorable Ryder, you had your hand up.
Chair, thank you. Yeah, just a comment on the quality of the minutes. I think it's excellent and it needs to be appreciated. And having spent 2 years bemoaning the quality of minutes in public works portfolio in the National Assembly, I think it's a good job. Well done and thank you.
Thank you very much. And I think we all agree with you. Honorable Karim is the one who has always been saying the good things and motivating the staff members for the good work that they are doing. And Matthew, I think you can see that we are doing everything possible. We are giving praise where it's due. and we want to motivate our workers because we don't want to work with people who are unhappy. And Estelle has done excellent job. And as a committee, we all agree that we appreciate her work. Thank you very much. It's teamwork. Oh, thank you. She doesn't want to take the action. Okay, thank you, members. Minutes have been adopted. The legal record, Advocate Jenkins, they're legal now. I'll sign them. So we don't need to go back and say we are going to go and listen to the Hansard and all that, and it just reflected the spirit in this team. Can we have a, how many minutes do you need, team? 3 minutes. Can you have 3 minutes break and grab a cup of tea or coffee?
That's another thing that we have to do. So, No. This conditional letter to the SADC about the guarantee. The guy here is from SABC.
Which one?
Yes.
Yes, very notorious.
Is it?
He also used to work for White Monopoly Capital, NetBank as a model at one
stage. So am I associated with the wrong person?
No, he's the right person.
Okay. So he was assistant, and I thought you have more powers. I know when I was that I can get anything anytime.
Okay.
So I was going to do a red tape thing and whatever, and but with your assistant, you can request that data.
From the one from
the DG. Because they have, he said
that they sent to SABC.
Yeah, they have said sent the letter to the SABC, and there are some conditions that they have not met, hence the squabbles among them.
Between the three?
Yeah.
Including the both ministers.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you want that letter.
That's all.
We are not spying for him, but we are just doing what we're supposed to do, because I think it's also in the interest of the worker.
Sure.
He has said something about identifying the core functions and what. And
the restructuring
outside
and
the meeting.
And the stations.
Before the meeting, when I engaged him, I sent some retrenchment.
Okay. No, that's been floating there for the past year and a half.
Can't allow that. No. Whatever they want to do, people must keep jobs.
Even if I'm right,
just come with
they've reduced the amount of contractors, isn't it?
Yes.
The contractors
can you
help
you?
Yeah. Thank you for the
check.
Thank you, honorable members. We at the team is done with the recommendations. Can I allow Lubabalo? Why am I? Yeah, Telelani Lubabalo. Can you please go through the recommendations as amended?
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Before I go to the recommendation, Chairperson, I would like to begin with the paragraph that we have received from Mr. Karim as a recommendation. It reads as follows. The committee understands that the 2019 elections significantly eroded the time and space available to the committee to process the appropriation bill, but expresses its reservations about having to finalize such an important bill so swiftly. The committee believes that in future, deciding on the date of national and provincial elections should take into account the legal requirements that the budget has to be adopted before the end of July. And Parliament also has to structure its program more effectively to ensure that the appropriations committees have adequate time to properly attend to their responsibilities in this regard. That's the end of it, Chairperson. Then in terms of recommendations, now they read as follows. After having considered all the submissions received and extensively deliberated jointly with the Standing Committee on Appropriations, the committee recommends that A, the Minister of Finance should put measures in place to ensure that funds are not shifted from basic service delivery areas to fund ailing public entities. B, the B remains the same. So in the interest of time, Jefferson, I'll go to the additional areas and not repeat what is already in the report. Then we have D. D states that the Minister of Finance should review the local government funding model given the financial and performance management challenges. I think those are the additions that you have in.
Okay, are we fine? Does this represent what you have recommended, members of Honorable Karim, Honorable Ryder? A summary of what we agree upon? We have indicated where we think will not be part of the recommendations, but this is what we're producing now.
Yeah, I think it's a satisfactory middle ground. Obviously, there's more work to be done, and we can take those battles going forward. But I think I appreciate the work. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Karim? Then, honorable members, this is the report. As amended, discussed, amended, and agreed upon, I want to give an opportunity to members to have a mover for the adoption of the report officially. Honorable member.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I want to propose that the report be accepted or adopted.
Thank you for moving for the adoption of the report. Seconder?
Chairperson, I would like to second the mover on the adoption of this particular report. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any dissenting view? None. Thank you very much, members. I want to thank you for your participation and cooperation moving forward, and I think this is the spirit that we'll also express in the Finance Committee going forward. Thank you. See you later in the House. Honourable Member, Ryder, I have requested you something to consult on how do you want to ask to debate, yeah, whether we debate or we do statements. To debate, okay.